Days pass and years vanish, and we walk sightless among miracles. Lord, fill our eyes with seeing and our minds with knowing. Let there be moments when your presence, like lightning, illumines the darkness in which we walk. Help us to see wherever we gaze that the bush burns unconsumed, and we, clay touched by your hand, can reach out for holiness and exclaim in wonder, how filled with awe is this place, and we did not see it. Please be seated. So maybe you have seen this video. There are two teams with three players each. One team wears white shirts and one team wears black shirts. They're in a small room and they're players moving around, tossing a basketball back and forth. Tossing it back and forth. As you watch the video, your task is to count how many passes were made by the white-shirted team. And at the end of the just one-minute video, you're supposed to report on that number. So you watch the white players, and all the players are moving around in this little room, and you count the passes of the white team. Simple enough, right? You could do that. Any of us can do that. But after 35 seconds, something unexpected happens. A gorilla enters the room, walks right in the middle of the players, beats his chest, and after 9 seconds, walks out. The question is, did you see the gorilla? This video experiment comes from the University of Chicago, and what researchers learned was, in fact, at least, if not more, slightly more than 50% of the people who viewed this video did not see the gorilla. Even when they ask if they noticed anything unusual, they say, no, I was counting the number of passes between the white players. You can Google this. It's called, just Google gorilla video and it will come up. The effect is called inattentional blindness. And I've done this. I've used this video at women's retreats, and it's true. Half the people, actually it was like 75% of the people in the room, never saw the gorilla. So this is inattentional blindness, and it's a blindness that happens when we are so busy attending to one thing that we miss or we don't see the other dynamic events happening around us. It's made even more pronounced now because of cell phones. In the book The Invisible Gorilla by Christopher Chabry and Daniel Simons, they go into great detail about this particular blindness. They're the authors of this gorilla experiment, and they added a couple of different kinds of experiments. And if you go deeper, you see these people having these conversations, and somebody passes between them with like a board. And when the board goes by, a completely different person is standing there, and you don't even notice it. You don't even notice it. They've done extensive research about inattentional blindness and how our intuitions deceive us. And the premise is this: we think we see ourselves and the world as it really is, but we're actually missing a whole lot. Because there are a whole lot of other ideas, actions, assumptions, and perceptions happening around us that we miss. Each one of us only sees one small piece, our own piece, of a much bigger picture. I can remember as a teenager realizing, hey, they don't think like I do. I think I might have had that realization, like, I don't know, Friday when I had lunch with Micah. He doesn't think like I do. So inattentional blindness, I think, is exactly what's going on in the gospel story today. Inattentional blindness. It's a fascinating story, and it's so full of like this great detail, right? And there are so many layers of meaning that we can look at and consider. So we'll begin with the disciples. It's the first thing. They see the blind man and they go, Jesus, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind? Well, what kind of blindness do the disciples have? Because that's actually, they actually a very typical question for the time when there was no explanation as to why babies would be born blind. Surely that person, that parent, somebody must have done something to piss God off. Yes, I use that word. To make God mad, and God said, now you're going to be blind. And actually, that is still a theology that's very present in all of us today. Oh man, I just messed up. God's going to strike me dead. But Jesus debunks that myth thoroughly and completely. God doesn't cause blindness. God doesn't cause disease. God doesn't cause harm. Rather, the work of God is to shed light on the world, to open us up to see more and to see better. Do bad things happen? Yes. The invitation isn't to blame God or to blame our sin. The invitation is to say, what is God wanting me to see more of in this? Opening our eyes to see differently. In an incredibly intimate and tender act, Jesus shows them God's invitation. He spits on some dirt, which is, I don't know, but surely reminiscent of how humans were created according to Genesis. Jesus spits on this dirt and he makes some mud and he rubs it on the man's eyes. Now this guy doesn't know what's happening to him. He can't see. But then he tells the man to go and wash in a pool that means scent. Surely this man must have been wondering what was going on. Spit and mud, and then to be sent in, to wash in a pool. This man, this blind man, was sent by God to see. His narrow world, in which he was reduced to begging for his existence, was suddenly illuminated and thrown open to a whole new way of seeing and living and being and understanding. Where the disciples had only been able to see sin, Jesus revealed the man's truer humanity. Now, from another perspective, we have the Pharisees. Oh, they're so good. The Pharisees could only see what they were trained to see. Jesus breaking the law on the Sabbath. Now, God's law, God said it was wrong to work on the Sabbath, and healing somebody was wrong. Making mud to put on something was work, and so that was wrong. And so clearly this healing was a hoax. And in order to get to the truth of this, the Pharisees hold a tribunal with the man who is blind. And when that wasn't enough, they included his parents. Who did this? They demanded. The guy says, Jesus. Some guy named Jesus. How do I know? I couldn't see him. My eyes were blind. They were covered with mud. And when his answer didn't fit with what the Pharisees wanted to hear, they called in his parents, right? I love that. Well, if we don't believe him, we'll get his parents in. And the parents, knowing this whole thing that if they said, well, it was Jesus, that they were going to be tossed out of the synagogue, right? They just go, they claim plausible not deniability. Don't drag us into this. He's old enough to speak for himself. Mm-mm, we're not getting involved. And when their answer didn't satisfy the Pharisees, they dragged back the healed man for more questions. Now, it's so easy to read his voice just dripping with incredulity and sarcasm. And with his newfound vision, the man wonders, how can you not say this was a miracle? How can you not see it was a miracle and a blessing from God? Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone has opened the eyes of a person born blind, and here I am standing here being able to see you. If this man were not from God, he wouldn't be able to do this. So news of this whole kangaroo court circles back to Jesus, and he goes in search of the man that he healed and says, do you believe in what I've done for you? Of course I believe in what you've done for me. Of course I believe in you, Jesus. And that would be a great ending to the story, wouldn't it? We could just stop right there and go, rah-rah, Jesus heals, we believe in Jesus, now we see, yay, good. Except that that's not the end of the story. There's a little bit more we have to listen to here. Because the Pharisees overhear Jesus and they wonder aloud, surely we're not blind, are we? To which Jesus basically says, are you? And that is the heart of the story for us. That's our invitation. Jesus wants us to consider, surely we are not blind, are we? If we say we're not blind, then we lie. And that's a sin. And if we're blind, then surely we would know it, right? Right? We'd know if we were blind. As the world grows smaller, and borders are getting crossed, and cultures are getting intermingled, what is being revealed is how little we really see and know, especially about our own culture and our own ethnicity. People that look like you are not like you at all. And people who couldn't be any more physically different from you, well, they may be the person you have most in common with, if you only knew. Our lack of awareness and sensitivity to this new world order is obviously being a source of friction, right? Right? You feel it? You know it. You hear it. You see it. Don't let those refugees in. Canada's now considering stopping the flow of refugees from this country to there. Oh, don't want them around. They're fearful. The term microaggression has been coined to describe the negative reactions that come from our lack of awareness. A microaggression are those brief but commonplace daily verbal, behavioral, or environmental indignities, whether intentional or unintentional, that communicate hostile, derogatory, or negative slights and insults toward anybody we don't understand. That's a long definition. Basically, a microaggression is when you say or do something, intentionally or unintentionally, that is derogatory towards somebody else. Driving while Asian. Definite microaggression. Microaggressions are very prevalent. They are prevalent around us every day, especially against people of color, non-cisgendered people, and women. Women face all sorts of microaggressions, from lack of equal pay to body shaming to comments like, not bad for a girl. My favorite one is the one the church does all the time. God, he. God, he. God is not a he. Jesus is, but God is not. Non-cisgendered and homosexuals daily hear comments like, oh, he's so gay, or she's so butch. Cultural microaggressions happen when somebody asks about a presumed ethnicity. No, where are you really from? Or, no, what are you? Trying to understand their cultural heritage. And of course, a not-so-microaggression is forcing a transgendered girl to use a boy's bathroom. Microaggressions are a symptom of our blind assumptions and egocentric viewpoints. And I know each one of us has committed a microaggression of some kind. I know I have, probably completely unintentionally, but that is not an excuse. That's not okay. The problem is we can't see what we can't see. We don't know what we don't know, so we use our filters. We project our viewpoints onto people around us based on our own assumptions. And then, of course, there are those times we don't want to see or don't want to know. When we choose denial or protectionism so that we can continue in our blindness. This is the blindness the Pharisees preferred, so that they could maintain their security of the system they knew so well. It's how they maintained their power. They only saw what they wanted to see, and therefore they had all the power. Except Jesus is not about power or control on any level. The man that Jesus healed stood in the light. He experienced the truth of having his eyes opened to the miraculous reconciling love of God. I cannot imagine what that might have felt like to suddenly be able to see color. His parents, olive trees. Wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice if we could have Jesus just come right up to us and spit on the dirt and rub it on our eyes? Would it, that it were so easy to have our assumptions and inattentional blindness removed from our lives. But that's not how it works. The way it works is that we have to do that work together. We have to help each other open our eyes and our hearts together. This is the way of Jesus. We have to invite each other to stand in the light. We have to have those exchanges that reveal truth, but don't blame and shame. We have to initiate the conversations where you and I listen to each other without needing to convince each other who is right or wrong. Because that is not what we're here to do. We are not here to decide who is right or wrong. We are here to love, to respect, and to build the reign of God. We know that the veil has already been pulled back on our vast and wide differences. We see and we know the divisions that are in our community, in our country. So we can continue to see only what we want to see, or we can step up to what we profess and promise when we said that we will respect the dignity of every human being with God's help. Have the conversation. It's not about who's right or wrong. It's about having the conversation. And we are at our best when we do this work. We are at our best when we hold tight to each other, letting our blindness be touched by one another, touched by God, and transformed into new ways of seeing and knowing. God truly loves us. God truly loves us as we are, and God loves us way too much to let us stay this way. The Apostle Paul says to us today, "Once you were in darkness, but now in the Lord you are in the light. Live as children of the light, for the fruit of light is found in all that is good and right and true." Amen.